me. Search your heart. Search your soul. And when you find.
CKUT is once again preparing to launch our yearly funding drive. Join us for our 35th annual funding drive, CKUT Till Infinity. The rocket ship needs $35,000 to blast off into a whole new level of community radio, and we need your help. We will begin collecting funds for our expedition on Thursday, March 17th until Sunday, March 27th. Donate in a few easy clicks online at ckut.ca/donate, or by calling 514-907-9424. CKUT Till Infinity and Beyond.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there is this thing?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news and brought to you live.
Welcome to Labor Radio. This is the March edition. As always, you hear us every third Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. It's also our fun drive edition, so we'll talk about that over the course of the show. My name is Stefan.
My name is Mustafa, and you're listening to our March edition of Labor Radio. And as Stefan said, it is the fundraising week for CKUT, and it is our 30th anniversary. So Please donate, please support community-based radio that's bringing constant news and stories and analysis that you're not going to get on CBC or any of the for-profit radio or television.
Yeah, so there's lots of different ways that you can help us reach the station's goal of $35,000. As of right now, we're sitting at just over 3,000, actually almost 4,000 at the time that we're recording this in the morning of Thursday. This is the first day of the fund drive, so we got lots of work to do. You can donate online at ckut.ca. You can also mail a check to CKUT. Go get the address on our website for that if you want. And then also you can call 514-907-9424 if you want to donate over the phone. So again, you can do that all week long, or it's actually until March 27th. And there's also some goodies that you get for donating. The list of all of those is again on the website, but there's different tiers of donation where you can get t-shirts, tote bags. There's also some draws with lots of different prizes that were donated by different local music festivals, film festivals, record labels, and so on. So you can check all that out on the ckut.ca. But again, please support our work at CKUT in bringing you these kinds of programs that don't exist elsewhere, as Mustafa was saying.
Yeah, and you know, for example, just, you know, $30, you'll get the 30th anniversary CKUT zine. You know, $120, you'll get everything. You know, t-shirt, tote bag, and a toque. So donate, you know, with inflation, this is barely, you know, this is barely nothing in your gas tank. So donate to CKUT instead and walk a little.
Yo. Listen to this man. He's forfeiting two lattes, you know? We'll talk more about that in a sec. We wanted to introduce the show, though. We did have some content for you that, as promised from last month, we wanted to deep dive into the Uber UFCW deal and just Uber generally. So one of our interviews today is with Doug Nesbitt from rankandfile.ca. Many of you who listen to this show know the website. So it was good to talk to him about sort of the history of these neutrality agreements between unions and employers, what did this agreement might mean. But that's not all that we have for you today.
Yeah, we also will be interviewing Ravi Jamil, who is... who is a researcher, a doctoral candidate, and a longtime writer on issues related to gig work, you know, particularly Uber and Uber in Quebec. So his perspective in terms of both the UCW agreement, but also the wider implications for work itself under Uber and sort of the gig, you know, platform capitalism.
So we'll be happy to play those interviews for you in a bit. A few labor stories to watch. In the meantime, though, for example, this one is pretty big, potentially involving 3,000 CP workers, Canada Pacific, the railway company. The employer is threatening to lock them out as of Sunday at 12 a.m. So this would be obviously one of the biggest possible disruptions to the supply chain. The strike vote came in at something like almost 97% from, I'm sure not all of the 3,000 workers voted, but it's a very strong mandate. It's the Teamsters who are representing them. Already very high placed government officials are talking about back to work legislation, unsurprisingly. And I think CP mentioned that 7 out of 8 of their last negotiations have involved federal intervention. So this is something to watch. It's going to have far reaching effects on the economy And obviously, we want to pay attention to that. Otherwise, interesting news on the healthcare workers front. There's two stories that I think are worth highlighting. One in Alberta, where the Alberta Health Services is negotiating 2 years late after the end of the last collective agreement with a lot of healthcare workers out there, and is asking for 11% reductions in wages for a number of different worker classifications. This is sort of after the pandemic and hero worship and all that stuff. So interesting to see how capital's turning around after 2 years of the pandemic and really changing their tune.
Oh, just quickly, also in Quebec, there was a story that launched this morning at Le Devoir about préposés who were outside of Quebec City who were did not have no work permits, but also at the same time were not actually being paid. They were quote unquote volunteers, full time volunteer préposés, and for profit long care homes. So also.
That's Mustafa's son, Nadim, who's participating in our fundraising edition. He's going to be donating the big bucks. But actually, on the question of for-profit healthcare in Quebec, Legault mentioned in a recent question period about how 20% of expansion of services in Quebec's healthcare system should probably come from the private sector. Who we know from the pandemic are unreliable to say the least and murderous at worst. But it's just funny to hear this story from this morning that I hadn't seen, Mustafa, about, operating a volunteer immigrant staff at for-profit healthcare facilities. Just a reminder, this is our fundraising edition of Labor Radio. Again, you might hear labor news in certain moments on other radio stations. You might even hear from labor leaders every now and then, but you won't hear labor analysis elsewhere on the airwaves of Montreal. So that is because of the independence of CKUT and the ability of community members like myself and Mustafa to be able to yammer on with the help of his son, Nadim, talking to you about labor politics in Quebec and Canada and even globally. So if you think that that's a useful mission for a radio station, I'd encourage you to donate. The number is 514-907-9424 or go to ckut.ca. All the information is there. It's really easy to donate. So again, yeah, if you value what we're doing, if you value what other people are doing on this radio station, now's the time to chip in to make sure that that keeps happening.
Yeah, and we're just talking $5, $10. I mean, it could be monthly, but every little bit helps. You know, this is really a radio station that has like stretched literally every dollar to make sure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, quality community-based radio, comes through on the internet, on your speaker. So please donate, to CKUT.
Notre-Dame s'est pendue, le facteur dans le banc de neige sous les billes, pas si dur. La grève, c'est mauvais comme de l'or, c'est tout coulé dans haine, tu veux voir des trésors. Des vrais trésors sont là, sa picket line. Courage, camarade, j'y j'ai rempli mon quota, un beau train de patates du local Dakota. À minuit 20, on a entendu un blast. Le bon Dieu en lambeau dans sa cendre et poussière dit j'aime la place rien qu'en masse, mais je préfère Toronto. Pour en chausser l'espoir, même s'il nous joue des tours, les étoiles se font voir au moment de l'amour. 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 Loge assez tué de bandits, mon église et les. J'ai assez sauvé de vie, même en comptant la mienne. Dormez, braves gens, tout est calme à l'urgence, et je rentre à regret, va pour une dernière chance. Au cabaret, on danse, on sait jamais quelques thèmes en secret. Verse-moi, bel enfant, de ton beau gaz d'avion. Je m'envole à l'instant dans ma boîte à savon. Je survole ma maison, les lumières dans ma chambre. C'est la fin des programmes, les cheveux de ma femme. Ma femme. Ma femme. Ma femme. Et je coule dedans, toujours bonne folie, à dire oui t'es-tu chérie. Et je ferme les yeux, et alors mes amis, je n'entends plus que le vent.
And we're back. You're listening to Labor Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We're happy to be joined by Doug Nesbitt. He's the editor at rankandfile.ca. He's here to talk to us about Uber. Like we mentioned in our last episode, there's been a deal struck between UFCW and Uber in some kind of weird, unprecedented, highly secretive deal that we don't really know too much about yet. But Doug co-wrote something for Rank and File. It's obviously big news in the world of labor. It actually crosses international boundaries, just like Uber does. So we thought we should talk about it. So thanks for joining us today, Doug.
Thanks for having me on. It's nice to be here.
So maybe can you get us started just by explaining, as you see it, sort of what happened between the United Food and Commercial Workers and Uber?
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive feat on UFCW's behalf, but they certainly gave up a lot to make the deal. It's essentially, it's a kind of a neutrality agreement between the company and the union to have some kind of protocol on how to move forward in their mutual interests, or as they perceive them. And UFCW has their foot in the door to represent Uber workers if they're dealing with any issues with the company. But that's not the same as, like, that. What does that actually mean? Is there a collective agreement that makes that binding? We haven't seen anything like that. There's no sign of it being part of a union drive, like signing cards. So what is it exactly?
that UFCW is up to. And to me, it just seems like a foot in the door to having some kind of union forming on a larger scale. And it's a dangerous gamble on their part, because if you can open the door through a neutrality agreement and build a union out of that, the resulting union is formed through these bureaucratic legal measures where, and I've been part of these sorts of processes as a union organizer, where you leverage an employer to a certain point, and then you're able to bargain a neutrality agreement where they might let you in the door and sign union cards without being harassed by management. And they just let it happen because there's some sort of deal that's been struck. So this, I think, is UFCW's attempt to kind of get their foot in the door to do a big organizing campaign with Uber. But the process is top down, and it isn't driven by any kind of worker-led campaign against the employer to improve conditions. The route that would go through a worker-led campaign to unionize would probably have to go through a pretty serious struggle with Uber to actually win and to gain a beachhead, and then to expand from there, building union power. And that would be a very different kind of union that would come out of that process than a process of cutting this neutrality agreement, where the union gets their like legal foot in the door to begin talking to workers and recruit them. I mean, there's a certain logic to it, right? If you're thinking, how do we organize Uber from this deal that UFCW has cut, is that if any worker comes forward to them and says, hey, I got a grievance, that's exactly the conversation you want to have as a union organizer. Find those workers who are willing to state their grievances, want to do something about it. And that's totally UFCW's plan, is to organize through this kind of neutrality agreement. But it doesn't really have, it doesn't really address any of these big questions that also exist in the sector, this gig worker sector, of the legislative legal status of gig workers. So the UFCW deal doesn't have anything to do with really tackling the problem of misclassification, of saying these people are independent contractors, so they can't enjoy these basic rights that that workers have, workers who are seen as directly employed. There's this legal fiction of an independent contractor, and the UFCW deal doesn't tackle that issue. It doesn't seem to tackle the problem of these portable benefits. They're called portable benefits that Uber is peddling and wanting governments to bring in, which is really a parallel safety net for gig workers. So instead of bringing gig workers into employment insurance and the pension plan and these things that you normally see coming off your paycheck, those plans are the gig workers are excluded from them, and then they have these parallel quote unquote portable benefits that appear to be, like, we don't really have an idea of what these are going to look like yet, but what are the odds that they're going to be any better than EI or CPP, right? They're probably going to be quite miserable to begin with. Oh, I'm sure they'll be sugar-coated, but that's what's going on right now, is Uber and UFCW are working together to kind of polish turd, so to speak. I mean, it's a pretty rotten deal from my perspective, as someone who sees the strength of the labor movement is through the power of the collectivity, right? Of workers working together in concert. That builds a very different kind of labor movement than the one that UFCW is on the path to build with this method. A lot of people who are familiar with working in unions will always run into the issue of trying to mobilize the membership. But if there isn't a tradition there, if there isn't actually a proven moment of struggle that formed something, it's a lot more difficult to build around. There are long traditions of this that have been beaten up and battered, and we have to build them again. But what kind of culture of workplace organization are we developing here with this UFCW deal. I don't know if that's the kind of labor movement we need to actually take on the Silicon Valley gig working economy that's happening right now.
One question, Doug, that I got related to that, in terms of the sugar coating, do you feel that this is going to be similar to what happened, I guess it's like 2.0 with the taxi drivers and sort of in steel, where it becomes more about sort of an insurance company for the drivers, and there's a way of not even having to extract concessions from Uber, right? Where it's like, well, if we're a membership-based organization, we'll get cheaper rates on car insurance and whatnot, all the things that they try to sell as membership to the organization.
Yeah, I think that's a distinct possibility with what UFCW has put forward here, is you end up with an organization that's a servicing organization that has a bunch of different programs that the members can access. And some of these unions have taken this to such a degree that if you actually call the union, you end up calling a call center. Like, they've just turned them into, they're such a servicing organization. They're kind of like an NGO nonprofit for workers at this point that doesn't really have anything to do with trying to extract concessions from the employers through concerted collective action. Strike action, job action, direct action, that sort of stuff. That's completely off the table. What we have here is enticing workers into organizations through saying, look, there's already a benefits package. That's what employers usually do. It's interesting that unions are now doing that.
I mean, one of my first thoughts when I saw that this had been announced, you know, was and I maybe this is like too speculative, but I was like, just since everything is secret about it to a large degree, what is, like, you're mentioning the idea that this is like a neutrality agreement in sort of in advance of a potential unionization, but what I thought was like, what if it's not, you know, like, I was like, how are they gonna get dues out of this, and what's in it for UFCW? Because there's nothing that says that people have to sign cards, you know? And so, like, is this some kind of like new way to sort of get around the RAND formula as it exists in Canada? And what's in it for the union if they can't even guarantee that they're going to sign the cards and ratify a union? Because that's been like even one of the big struggles with these types of companies, where it's tough to get like employee lists because there is no workplace. If Uber is like basically forcing the union on the workers, that's one thing, but if Uber is not doing that, then how is UFCW actually gonna ratify a union? Like, there's all kinds of questions about like jurisdiction, like, because it's not limited to one place, like, how do you build locals? Anyways, all these questions come up, and I was like, holy crap, like, what's gonna happen here? And is there something bigger at work, I guess, was like what I was partly afraid of and partly just really curious about.
Yeah, those are all really good questions. I'm not entirely sure where it's going. There are several possibilities, and it's hard to figure out what they're doing because, as you said, the deal was secret. So it's made by a select group of people who, I don't know of any kind of union, democratic union mandate to do what they did. So I'd be curious to know who actually motivated that and led that effort. And then we might get some sense of what they actually have planned. There's a few things we do know for sure about UFCW, which is they are one of the unions that is like most loyal to the NDP and see the legislative route as probably one of the most fruitful. I mean, they see it as the path to actually making change. So these methods that they've employed are not surprising in that respect. And you might be able to, you could speculate or see how they've positioned themselves to influence, for example, the prospect of the NDP winning the Ontario election this year, because they're in the opposition right now. Organized labor in Ontario is just like, do we have any eggs? Get all the eggs, throw them all in the NDP basket. That's all they're doing right now. I could go on and on about the inability of organized labor in Ontario to really do anything during the Ford government. And UFCW is in that as well. But they've really thrown their lot in with the NDP for quite a long time. And maybe that's what they're trying to do, is position themselves to leverage the NDP to bring in changes to that sector. I mean, I don't know what their plan B is, because that's a pretty risky approach as well. I mean, the prospect of the NDP being elected again is not great. And the record of the NDP on labor questions has become pretty poor. If you look at what happened with the Horgan government in BC, they were first elected in 2017 in a minority position, and they opened the door to Uber coming into the province. And within a couple months of them being elected, they abandoned their promise at automatic card check certification that would just mean if a union signs a majority of a workforce up to union membership, they take that to the board. The board confirms that it's a majority, and boom, the union is certified. No two-step vote process that gives the employer an extra week or whatever to intimidate the workforce into voting against the union. So they abandoned that. They blamed it on the Greens. They now have a majority, but they didn't run in the last election that won them the majority on bringing in card checks. So the one demand that was brought forward by the BC Federation of Labor, which includes UFCW, which is huge behind the BC NDP, their one demand out the window. So, you know, I don't know what the UFCW thinks the Ontario NDP is capable of doing on the labor legislative front. So that's why maybe that's not the route they're going. And something like a kind of voluntary organization might be where they go. There is a historical parallel in Ontario as well that totally flopped. And if their idea is they sign this neutrality agreement and get their foot in the door, and workers will come flocking their way, the CAW, the auto workers, tried to do that with the Canadian auto parts giant Magna of the Stronach fortune. You may have heard of Frank and Belinda Stronach. Well, it's Frank Stronach, and Belinda Stronach was a Tory under Harper. And I think she switched to the Liberals too. So, you know, classic corporate class, right? They'll be in both parties, no problem. So the CAW signed this neutrality agreement, and Magna said, hey, if you sign up 50%, you will get the union. But the union that was going to be provided, there was already a deal struck about what it would look like, and there would be like no steward representation, there'd be a really thin grievance process, they wouldn't have a right to strike. Like, it was a really rotten deal. And guess, did any auto parts workers flock to join this new CAW stitch up with Magna? No, nobody joined. So these sort of top-down approaches also have a pretty poor track record. So what UFCW is up to is really, I have no idea. But one thing is certain, is that it's the opposite of the route that, for example, the Gig Workers United campaign in Toronto is pursuing, which is a very, very grassroots, almost to a fault, where it is limited to Toronto. And that's something to actually tackle and address for new unions that are emerging. And the other thing is that that's a jurisdictional problem as well, because the Gig Workers United is funded by the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. And so the CUPW and UFCW are in the same labor congress, right? So it's not like Unifor where they're outside of the CLC and they're kind of like, hey, we make the rules now. So the tension there, that will become a jurisdictional problem if both campaigns progress. If one of them falls by the wayside, then, well, now it's a different chapter of the story. There are big problems, and it's not really clear how UFC intends to deal with all these limitations and past examples of either the legislative political route or parliamentary route, or the route of kind of neutrality agreement, top-down approach to forming a union. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of not just about the pitfalls, but also, so what are the implications of them not sort of not challenging the sort of the status of, you know, these drivers as workers, and sort of what are the implications of that by not sort of challenge that fundamental basic relationship?
That's a really great question. And that really, I think that's the key question about looking at this sector, is that what is being lost with this approach is confronting on a couple of levels the project that is underway, that Uber is and the other gig companies are actually advancing. They have a business strategy that for a while there was wrapped up in the word like disruption, and the disruption. It's better to think of it as restructuring. Disruption is the technique. Restructuring is the goal. They're restructuring this labor market and this sector of the economy to create a new source of like super exploited labor. And they're ginning up the stock market at the same time to cover themselves on the back end of the financing, because the model is, it's a wild ride what they're doing financially. There's been a lot of writing about what a kind of bonkers project Uber is up to. But Uber has, I mean, not only do they now have sections of labor on side, but they've had governments on side for a long time, especially the traditional kind of the centrist and the center right and the neoconservative parties. And their strategy with them has, over the past year, they've put forward this set of policies to how they want the sector to be dealt with. And they're presenting this as we're being a responsible corporate actor, and the governments are looking at it and saying, oh, this looks good, let's put this through. And they're also wrapping it up. So in Ontario, for example, we have Bill 88 that's coming through. There's already been a referendum, I believe it was Prop 22 is the number, from California that happened a year or two ago. And we've just learned, we were talking before the show started about there's now been a deal. Well, it's more like the UFC deal that's happened in Washington State. But essentially what we have is UFCW going along with this Uber plan to pass legislation and entrench legislation to legally secure this new second tier or third tier class of worker in different jurisdictions, whether it's states or provinces, municipal, as in some parts of the US, or federal. And that's really the project that Uber is behind. And UFCW's approach is just like, it's not confronting any of that. It's not addressing the larger problem. Maybe they have some like seven phase plan, like some magical plan that has many steps in advance that we don't know about, where they eventually get to the point where all these workers are recognized legally as workers like any other, and you know, the advance of labor is suddenly unleashed. I don't see that master plan. What I see is the UFCW cutting really, really deep compromises with this agenda that Uber is pushing, that their allies in many different governments and political parties are happy to advance. I mean, they're opening up new profit streams, new revenue streams for their project, their political projects and economic projects. It's a new means of privatization that governments are going to love, because there's a whole new cheaper workforce of people they can contract out to. I mean, why would any government ever have courier services or postal services in-house anymore, when you can have you can phone up somebody on Uber to deliver the classified documents across the street or something like that. So Uber and the government, different governments of different levels, they have this strategy just not being addressed by UFCW with this deal that they've cut. That's how I see it, at least.
Well, thanks, Doug. I feel like we probably got to leave it there. Or Mustafa, you have another question?
Yeah, more like a comment question, because it seems almost like it's, when you said company union in the beginning of the interview, it kind of, and what you're talking about now, it really feels like that, not just like, you know, what we saw with Prop 22, but sort of these kind of legislative losses that Uber took in Europe, especially, right? Like the UK and Spain. Can this sort of neutrality agreement with UFCW sort of protect them from what would be, you know, any legislative possibility, right? Of changing the way Uber is addressed as an actual employer.
Yeah, that's I see it very similar. That is the problem that's happened. The different route of forming the union from below through workplace organizing is the route that's going to have to be taken if those big legislative questions are actually going to be brought to a head about whether these workers are recognized one way or another. Very briefly, I think the example we might want to look at from Canadian history is what happened with fishermen on the East Coast in 1970, 71. There was an organizing drive of the East Coast fisheries, and they were all classified in this archaic legal category as co-adventurers. They were not seen as workers. But the organizing was militant, and there were strikes, and then there was actually Nova Scotia had a one-day general strike in sympathy with some of the fishermen who were arrested. And it forced through these legislative changes where the co-adventurer thing was just completely wiped out. There's a whole other story there about what happens to the union after that. But the example in Nova Scotia was like a tidal wave that spread across the Maritimes, where like within a year, Newfoundland had got rid of their co-adventurer legislation. It was a ripple effect in favor of workers because of what had happened. I can't think of an example of those kinds of categories being wiped out through neutrality agreements. Maybe, I mean, we've seen it with what an NDP government can do, like awarding agricultural workers, farm workers in Ontario in the 90s, the right to unionize, but that was repealed within a year. And that was 30 years ago. I mean, has the NDP changed over the last 30 years? I think so. So, I mean, it was changed. The same union that brought in the farm workers bill was the same, or the same party that brought in the farm workers unionization bill in Ontario was the same one that breached all the public sector contracts to impose cuts. So, I mean, what legacy of the NDP has actually grown from that period, and which one has diminished? I mean, I think we have to look at these realistically about what has actually happened. And UFCW, if they're putting their chips in the NDP as part of this plan as well, I don't know what to say. I'm like, you're dreaming.
Well, yeah, that's a good note to end on, I guess, for all the NDP dreamers out there. Thanks so much for chatting with us about that, Doug. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate your work at Rank and File. Encourage everybody to check out your website, sign up for a newsletter and whatnot. Any last words?
Thanks for having me on. And yeah, when you get on rankandfile.ca, sign up for that newsletter. Consider taking out a monthly sub, and we can keep doing what we're doing at rankandfile.ca. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Doug.
Cheers.
You're welcome.
Just a quick note to listeners. We had to unfortunately cancel our interview with Rabi about Uber. So we're looking forward to speaking with him in the future on this. So look to hear that on our Mixcloud in the near future if you want to complete what you just heard from Doug about the more labor union interpretations and analysis. And that Rabi will talk more about the labor market analysis of Uber. So sorry about that little mix-up, and that's the beauty of Almost Live Radio. We'll talk to you soon.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news and brought to you live.
Okay, so we were listening to our interviews with on Uber and the changes in Ontario, specifically with the new agreement between the United Food and Commercial Workers and Uber. We were speaking with Rabia Jamil, a researcher from UDM who specializes in Uber and labor rights, and also
with Doug Nesbitt from rankandfile.ca. So thanks for listening. One more time, it's our fundraising edition. So go to ckut.ca or phone us at 514-907-9424 and pitch in. Help us keep this little station on the air with our big ideas and our big hearts.
Yeah, so please do support. Everything counts. Everything keeps this place up and running. So
we're counting on you, our faithful listeners at Labor Radio. Do us proud. We'll be back next month with another edition of Labor Radio, with your help, of course. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time. Oh,
Et vous écoutez CKUT 90,3 à Montréal.
Ok, oh, merci beaucoup.
CKUT's annual funding drive, CKUT Till Infinity, takes place from March 17th to 27th, 2022.
We have brand new merch available for our donors, including shirts, bags, and hats.
Donations over $30 will also be entered to win from a selection of exciting prizes from our sponsors.
This year's sponsors include
Loofah Farms,
Briar Patch Magazine,
Pop Montreal,
Encore Books and Vinyl,
Drawn and Quarterly,
La Bobineuse,
RIDM,
Mutech,
Centaur Theatre,
CNL Cycle,
La Maison des Bières,
Cinéma du Parc, Bobien and Dumisé,
Death of Vinyl,
La Rama Records,
Constellation Records,
Celluloid Lunch Records,
and Pizza Bouquet.
CKUT would like to thank our community sponsors whose generous support helps put the fun in funding drive.
For more details on prizes and to donate, go to ckut.ca/donate.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. Planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
If it appears that COVID-19 symptoms like cough, fever, sore throat, and loss of taste and smell are beginning to present themselves, you can begin to self-isolate and take a rapid test at home. After getting your test results, you can learn more about proper self-isolation guidelines by visiting quebec.ca/self-isolating. This information is there to help protect you and everyone living under the same roof. All of us can make a difference, so let's keep making sure all of us are safe. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Building on fire. I have been Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the place also known as Tshotshage in Ganyagaha and Munayang in Anishinaabemowin, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on Thursday, March 17th, 2022. Happy St. Patrick's Day, happy Purim, and happy CKUT 2022 funding drive. On tonight's show, my guests, Jesse Stong of the Young Creators Unit at Playwrights Workshop Montreal on the Queer Reading Series.
If you're in 2022 and you haven't like become cool with queerness, it's like, it's not for you anymore. We have our, it's for us now, like. And so you're seeing a lot more stories that are more complex and characters like Black Casper and also the characters in the Johnny's piece too. Like there's more complexity. They're allowed to be bad and queer. They're allowed to be complicated. You're allowed to be troubled, but not suicidal necessarily. You can just be a human being, right?
François Blouin reinvents Oedipus Rex with a little help from mime and clown.
Clown for me, it's an art that is trying to be in between two worlds. The world of reality and the world of fiction.